Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, on this 78 degree January day. Even the dogs are happy. So today's episode is about the benefits of flat earth. And some of you will get that right away, and some of you will be like, what the hell are you talking about? Here's what this episode is going to review. Because there's some drawbacks about this too, which I'm going to talk about. The benefits of flat earth, to me, starts at all of our consciousness measured a second before the flat earth emerged on YouTube, re-emerged, I should say. Emerged for the first time on YouTube and re-emerged for society. And then all of the steps between then and now. Because I think there have been some incredible benefits for folks to contemplate where the hell we are. Now, I'm going to acknowledge at the very beginning, there have been some drawbacks as well. Because disputes have occurred, and we've had some damage as well. So we're going to talk about that too. But let me just say to you that I think, because of my own journey especially, having grown up, I was just a science kid, like any nerd. As I got money, I got more books, I got more resources. As I worked in technical industries, I ended up bumping into folks and learning more and more and more. And because I asked a ton of questions related to understanding materials and principles and all that, I'm always trying to make, the right hand of information shake hands with the left hand of information such that everything connects. But now, let's think about how that's done. When you're young, you know you don't know things. Sadly, when you get older, you think you know a lot, but we all fight that. But when you're young, your reason for researching is directly related to your voids in your mind and your inquisitiveness and your angst for not knowing. Because the more that you kind of look around the universe and you realize, God, I don't know how anything works. It blows my mind how some people wake up every day, go to work, come home, do all their stuff, and go to bed. And have no concept of how jets stay in the air, how cars work. I mean, no concept. I was a super duper inquisitive kid. The first time I ever dreamed of two naked ladies was at my grandfather's car dealership. And I'm in the showroom, which is basically a warehouse with cars parked, almost parallel to each other. There's two women with their boobs out, sort of in like leathery kind of outfits, the huge natural boobs. And so that was interesting to me, but I guess in the back of my mind, I remember seeing my mom's boobs. And so that wasn't as mysterious to me, definitely appealing. And what I wanted to do was take their pants off because I didn't know what was down below. And the whole time I'm just saying, oh yeah, you want me? Oh yeah, and I'm probably like three or four having this dream. But I'm trying to get their pants off. And I believe I got it down, and it was sort of like a Made in China Barbie doll, which is all I ever got to see. It's funny, right? But for me, when someone drives a car, and they have no idea how the car operates, no combustion engine knowledge, zero anything, how the power, once it's generated in the engine, transfers down through axles and makes the car go. In their brain, all I could think of is everything's sort of a Hot Wheel. Hot Wheels, you can't open the hood, you can't see underneath, and when you flip them upside down, it's just a plate of metal that says, made by Mattel and China. So that drives the mind. So the interesting thing, the first step that took place for Flat Earth is that you found people that wanted to know. And that's sort of the blessing, We're all coming here to find the answers to, how do we know what shape the world is? I mean, you think you know. You fly in the sky at 35,000 feet, you're not supposed to see any curvature, and you don't. The only few people on planet Earth that would have ever seen any curvature would be someone in a spy plane really, really high in the military, perhaps someone in NASA, maybe. Again, NASA always cuts their cameras, and they always use fisheye lenses, and folks that are involved in rocket projects in the desert, even though they're independent, they always have fisheye lenses on them. Well, Jesus, you can make my bathtub look like it's round with fisheye lens. But you had a group of folks that weren't, well, sorry, I should say, they were willing to ask a question in an area that is already answered. You're supposed to just believe what you're told. You are. You're never supposed to ask any questions about a globe. You're never supposed to question NASA. So the first beautiful thing is it congregated a bunch of like minds in terms of inquiry, in terms of folks that wanted to have integrity, people who wanted to know, look, I don't know. You know, when you first move into flat Earth, I don't think anyone, I've never heard anyone tell the story, well, I thought it was a globe, and then I just saw the first 60 seconds of a flat Earth video, and I was totally converted. It might have been quick, but it wasn't that quick. And so you had to ingest information and have your mind blown a little bit as you're kind of going, yeah, you know, that is weird. I had my mind blown. At the same time, I hadn't done a single lick of research in it. So what's wild is, you know, when you study all the official science of the world and you feel enlightened, you feel informed, and then to have someone just run up and take your pants down from behind. And the reason why I'm making this episode and calling this out is take your average flat Earth explorer. And I'm just saying you have explored flat Earth. Doesn't mean you believe it's flat, but you're a flat Earth explorer because you're taking in information. Perhaps you're still taking in information. And you're undecided, but you're willing to explore. And then you take a lot of these people in the world right now that can't deal with the fact that their president-elect, their presidential campaign candidate didn't win. They can't accept it. It has to be my way or else. Think about the integrity of the group of people that are willing to explore flat Earth. It's automatically higher than a big bunch of protesters out in the world. Automatically. And that's awesome. That is awesome. So the first thing I want to say is that the group of people that are willing to watch this video and listen, you're some cool cats. You're patient. And you have the courage to explore. And on that note, I want to put a footnote and go back to one of the drawbacks that's happened is that folks have separated friendships due to not agreeing on this whole thing. And I'm going to tell you, when you want to find out the people you should surround yourself with, let's give it the apocalypse test. Right? You have a choice between a protester holding a sign and you have a person that's a flat earther when you're not. But you need more people to survive the apocalypse. So you got to make a choice. Pick one of these two people. Where's the integrity? Well, you know right away that one group of holding the signs, at least in America today, completely uninformed, completely entitled, they're going to expect you to do all the work for them. They're not going to expect to do any work for your survival. They don't like information. They don't like truth. And they pout like babies regardless of how old they are. And on this side, you have people that have the balls to potentially believe something you don't believe. But there's nothing wrong with them at all. Even though you disagree on this one theory, and you might believe that it's painfully obvious that it's round, and they think it's painfully obvious it's flat, the integrity between your two souls is huge. And you can keep them as friends, even though you have that difference. And I apologize for bringing in a political spin to this, but it's a great contrast of the integrity of people. I've never seen the integrity of individuals drop in my lifetime like I have in this 2016-2017 presidential election, which I promise I'll get off that in 2 seconds here, but I don't feel like I have to unfriend people that believe conspiracy theories or conspiracy facts or different facts than I do. As long as they have a smile on their face, we still wish each other well, and they continue exploring and I don't. Or I explore with the bias that I think it's round, and they explore the bias with the bias that they think it's flat. It's kind of nice, you know? It's almost like a computer with multiple processors. And you guys get to be one CPU together, right? They have a CPU core that's going off and continuing to look at flat Earth. And just maybe they need a little bit more time to get to your understanding. Maybe you've actually had physically more time to explore. Maybe the way that you saw data was different than the way they saw data, but eventually they will see it your way. Or, if you keep exploring on your end, perhaps you find something that makes you wobble. You're like, well, yeah, you know, but I got this other stuff. Makes me think it's round. I mean, like, I completely believe it's round. But this other side has brought up an interesting fact that's weird. I never really got into the community of Flat Earth online because I just simply don't have the time. I don't like making videos where I'm talking about other people on YouTube because I think that's, no matter how you do that, unless you're just mentioning someone and complimenting them, there's, you know, my opinion of someone else shouldn't matter to you that much. It really shouldn't. You should form your opinion of someone else based on what you think is a process to do so, right? The problem with me expressing my opinion about someone else is that I would be engaging in pointless tribalism. You know, if you thought that all the videos I've ever made are fantastic, good, or at least good-natured, and you have a positive opinion about me as an individual, and then I cast aspersions within this community, which, you know, there's, I cast aspersions all the time about globalism and corporations and bankers and stuff. And that's where I think that we have to affect change on the world to actually improve this planet. But in the case of Flat Earth versus round, it won't change the electric bill in my house. You know, even if God popped out of the clouds, you know, I don't know if he'd come down and say, all your mortgages are paid off. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, right? He's going to say, hang in there. See you when you're done. So I don't want someone to say, well, we can't like this person because our guy over here in Deep Thoughts doesn't like this person. I have what I consider to be the closest virtual friends that one can have through YouTube, through Facebook, who I met them for different reasons, totally outside of Flat Earth. Flat Earth just happened to show up in the middle of our friendships. But I guarantee you, I've got a friend that is more along the lines with myself, where it's round, and I have a friend of mine that believes it's flat, and I love both of them and what they do, but there was a point, and you guys know who you are, where they were together, and they were sharing their differences, and just being very cordial, and then there was a separation, and so I will tell you that, just in my opinion here, I understand the process of saying, I don't want to have people in my circle that influence me away from my decisions. And usually that means you're still kind of putting the stakes in the ground. It's almost like, you know, you got a plot of land and you're going to build a home on it. But it's the first day and you're putting the stakes in the ground to try to figure out where the foundation's going to go. And someone shows up and says, are you ready for the party? And you're kind of like, oh, well, let me get the house built. Why don't you come back in like 6 months or so and see how I'm doing, and maybe I'll have enough of the house up. We can have a little shindig inside. Right now, I got to build this house. And that can, the house is your belief system sometimes. And so you kind of need to put spacers out there to kind of get your mind straight. It could be that you don't have any ill feelings towards anyone. You just, you're kind of sorting out your thoughts. Let me just sort out my thoughts a little bit. I don't want any more data in here that doesn't agree with what I agree, because I'm just sorting out my thoughts. My hope is that we can use these beautiful moments in time to meet new people, to meet people that believe things that are different than what we believe, but aren't, you know, they aren't acidic, right? A lot of us believe things that are completely acidic. You know, we have a bunch of folks holding protest signs in America, and they are absolutely fighting for the bank oligarchy that has destroyed the world. They are fighting to make sure that people who are utter pedophiles become politicians at the highest degree. They're still politicians. They're still doing stuff. Hopefully they get nailed. But they think in their mind that they have a cause because they hate their lives. Because of the previous administration has made them hate their lives, they won't attach it. They want a boogeyman that's outside of their perception of being had by the system. And so they're blaming the next guy in the Minority Report manner, which is, I'm going to accuse you of things you haven't done. Scapegoating at its most primitive format, right? So it's important that we understand the difference between differences within something as simple as flat earth. Now let me give you an example of where I have fallen for the separation of friend allure with non-political stuff, non-important stuff. You know, I put a lot of effort into exposing the moon missions as a hoax. By the way, I watched a video yesterday. I got to find it. And I go to my smoke shop and we watch YouTube there. And I'm always trying to find out what videos he's watching. I need to subscribe to his channel and then I'll have his watch history. But, you know, man, the evidence coming out is just so damning and so perfect. It can't be anything other than a hoax. It's just great. But the moon one is one that I've been dealing with for the better part of 15 years at least. And because I was told, you know, we didn't go and I got all the information in 91, but then I went on with life and I just wasn't prepared for that information. I didn't have the internet to confirm anything. I couldn't just look up stuff and figure it out. But I have been in rooms with people that are extremely hurt that anyone would say that we didn't go to the moon. And when I ask them questions about science and just the basics of the missions, the basic composition of the rockets, of the lunar landers, of the lunar modules, they know nothing. They just know the most cartoon imprint in their mind of what was involved. And they're arguing with me about evidence that would suggest that it's not real. In fact, the smoking gun evidence, they don't understand enough of the surrounding science, which isn't that much, people. All right, it's not like you have to be a astrophysicist or a PhD of anything to look at a lot of the mechanics and just simply say that's horseshit. And the funny thing is you can find the people with those degrees, with those accolades who are on tape and basically, you know, YouTube affidavits saying, I'm going to take you through this and prove that it's bullshit. But some people are just so freaking butthurt about the moon. And so I have sat in rooms with people that I admire for other reasons greatly and had to sort of listen to a super lowbrow version of why I'm wrong and they're right. And I've often fantasized about going into Jack Parsons' laboratory and having someone take me from square one of everything that they had tested and discovered to Apollo 11, take me through every single, millisecond of the mission from there and back, and somehow convince me that we went. But I know that they can't. They can't pull that off. Project Orion, if nothing else, is the coup de grace. We know we can't get through the Van Allen belts, so we've created a mission to figure out how to do that. Oopsie. We realize we just admitted we didn't go. Let's cancel the project. Really funny. But I've sat in a room, and I had this buddy, and we're talking, and I have to say, I'll bring up smoking gun after smoking gun after smoking gun, and then he brings up the most lowbrow, uninformed, cartoony reply to why my hardcore, super research, super supported by brilliant PhD-level folks reasons are false. And you can tell he's never done any search on the evidence. He's never watched the videos that really are the telltale sign that these are fake moments in time. They've been orchestrated on a set. And I have felt that feeling in my chest of, my God, at least in this area of this person's life, their patriotism is more important than reality. And there's a bunch of historians which will support that guy and say, well, you know, if you're going to lose your country because you believe that they're liars, or keep your country because you think they tell the truth, look at the longevity of your life and your kids related to that outcome and tell me which one you pick. And sometimes they say, well, you know, delusion is everywhere in the world. Why not keep the delusions that keep the fabric of your corporation, Jesus, it is the fabric of your country together through beliefs and bullshit. I think anyone who watches this show completely disagrees with that assessment. If you watch this show, you are absolutely dedicated to the truth. And you know that I'm just doing my very, very best to decipher information, bring it to you. You know, there was a couple things wrong in my moon evidence part two. Not real important stuff, but like the lunar lander, I believe, has five legs. I said four. You know, I want you to know I cringe when I hear me say anything wrong in a video because it's really hard to, you know, I have a podcast version of it too. As what can I do? Cut it out or insert my voice. There's really five. So just know that I anguish over the smallest mistake in my videos and stuff. I should probably put a little more effort into posting the errata on Facebook. And I just want to mention there's a lot of you going over to MK Ultra Radio and talking to me about Deep Thoughts Radio. Two totally different properties. It's facebook.com/deepthoughtsradio if you want the Facebook, just so you know. But I sat there with my buddy, and I remember thinking, on one side of my mind, I'm thinking, I will never discommunicate this person from my life because he is a fabulous guy. He's just a wonderful soul. Love talking to this guy, and boy, can we talk. But on the other side, I'm thinking, do I really want folks in my circle who are incapable and unwilling to even give it a chance, to give truth a chance? Because in my mind, you know, I'm on this show recording the crap out of these episodes, and I'm thinking to myself, how can I live for the mantra of truth and put people in my life that can't seem to see it, aren't willing to see it, aren't willing to change their minds once they've had it swayed? And then I realize how immature I've been to think those thoughts. But you go ahead and acknowledge those thoughts. You have those thoughts. And I'm going to share with you the method I use to keep these people in my life. There's something called a checksum, and you'll hear me say it every once in a while in an episode. And if you're a software person, you automatically know what I'm saying. But a checksum is a method of taking any clump of data. It doesn't have to be a computer-related thing, but it's used in computers. Let's say you wrote a screenplay. You write a screenplay and I write a screenplay. Two different screenplays. They're both in Final Draft. And they're just files on the hard drive. And you want to see if these two files are exactly the same thing. A checksum algorithm starts at the first bit of that file and uses an algorithm to create a number that isn't very big. But every bit it experiences in your script, it starts changing the number, changing the number, changing the number. At the very end of your file, it's got a number, and it writes that down. That's your checksum number. And then it goes to my file and does the same thing. Starts with zero, and every single piece of data that comes through, it's scrambling this checksum. It's one of the most brilliant algorithms that exists on planet Earth. Because if those files aren't exactly the same, bit for bit, if 101 is different, the two numbers don't match, and the computer can say these two files aren't the same. And that's how your cell phone figures out you need to update apps, because every app has a checksum. For me, there are people that you don't want to have in your life because their checksum is more like the misinformed, self-absorbed, kind of negative personality that you just don't want to be around. It will affect you personally. It will make you like them. You know, we adapt. Most of us adapt and chameleon to folks that we're around. I know for a fact that there's folks that you like me, folks out there like me, and you won't swear much, but you start hanging out with your buddies that do. And oh my gosh, you're at a restaurant, you're someplace, and it's F-bomb this, F-bomb that, da-da-da. And all of a sudden, you start F-bombing. And then you don't really notice it much. And part of it is, curse words, they attach to weird emotions in your body that seem to be incapable of being attached to other words. And so when you swear, you're trying to grab a pollutant out of your body and eject it out. And fuck is attached to certain feelings in your body that, darn it, won't attach to. It's like a better magnet pulling crap out of the salvage yard of your darkest moments inside your body, right? Or in some cases, it's obviously a It's an exclamation point on the end of a point, right? But you then leave your friends and you go off to a group of folks that aren't swearing. And for a lot of us guys, it's you go back to your girlfriend from your guy friends. And I used to have this problem a couple of years ago. I dated a girl that just didn't swear at all, which is great. I love it. You know, I don't want to swear that much. And I would drop an F-bomb. And she'd look at me, hey. And I was like, ooh, sorry. So just keep getting on my case. I apologize. But it took one stupid mistake to realize what was going on, right? But the way that I keep people in my life that have disagreements with is just based on the integrity of their character. And again, when I think about the other CPU core going off and researching something that I believe I am done processing, you know, if this was a physical exploration, you know, it's like we didn't have any computers, there was no internet. And we were on the surface of this planet. Someone told us this round, and then someone walked in and I said, "My God, guys, I think it's actually still flat. I think this has all been a big coup." And we all kind of look around and go, "Well, the integrity of the person bringing that information to us seems good. You know, I mean, they don't seem to have any other record of calling Wolf. So, okay, well, then explain it to us." And he starts explaining. He gives some compelling arguments. We all go in and we do what we can to research. Now, my willingness to research it might be 6 months. But the next person in the group is willing to research it for 2 years. So what's going to happen? You're going to need to go to sleep at night, most likely, in 6 months with whatever conclusion you can come up with what your research has provided. Your brain is different. You're going to research information differently and come to different conclusions, perhaps some faster. And it doesn't mean you're right because you're faster. It just means that you think you were right and that's where you are, right? So you conclude in 6 months. You're like, you know what, I see your points, but I think I've got 4 or 5 smoking guns that makes it round. And that's where I am, right? After, I guess, I don't know what it's been. It's been about 10 months, I guess, 8 months. But are you really going to walk over to the person that's going to continue for another year and a half and say, "Stop researching this. It's obviously round. They're full of shit. Look at this evidence." No. What you should do is say, "Okay, I think I've got, I was down in the same path as you are, but look at this. Round, 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 round. Can't be possible, can't be possible." Now, the first thing is you could be wrong. When the paradigms of reality shift so much that there's a deception going on, if we're in a dish, which I don't think we are, but if we're on a dish and some firmament dome, then there's a cabal going on against us perceiving where we really are. Now, it's not against us in terms of our lives and our nature, right? There really isn't, right? But someone would try, they obviously want us to believe it's round in some manner, because all the powers that be preserve this round nature if we're truly in a disc. If we're in a disc with a dome over the top, then someone built it. Whether it be God or aliens or whatever, someone would have built that and we would be captive. And so the game is to make us believe, beyond the shadow of a doubt, we're in a ball. Because the moon's round, the sun's round, all the planets are round. So the way that, you know, for me, the star patterns in the South Pole are a smoking gun that it's round. But there's a bunch of things that makes me think it's round. Okay, expanding Earth being the number one thing. By the way, Neil Adams, the guy that actually brought this to everyone's attention, the expanding Earth theory. I found out, I knew he was an animator, but I watched a special on Netflix on National Lampoon's, about an hour and a half special. Totally recommend it if you're into that kind of thing. But Neil Adams was a National Lampoon cartoonist. For those of you who don't know who National Lampoon is, it was a magazine. It was really, really edgy in the, I think, late 60s, early 70s. But they eventually turned into the films like Animal House and Caddyshack, and then obviously Vacation, all that kind of stuff. But they created everything, television shows. They created the stage play comedy series that actually turned into SNL. But SNL poached them all because National Lampoon wasn't smart enough to sign contracts with all the actors and writers. Little Paul Harvey there for you. But if we're in a disc and it's a cabal against us to stay there and be happy because we're in some sociological experiment, and I know this is kind of crazy going through this, but it would be that there are smoking guns that make it look like it's round, you know? So I don't mean to give extra fuel to flat earthers. You know, I was looking at was it Google Earth the other day, and just the bottom of the oceans are such the proof that this thing is a round ball. You know, the skid marks of how the Earth's crust is expanded. You know, look down the middle of the Pacific, the middle of the Atlantic, and you can just see how all these continents just scooted away from each other. But like Neil Adams said, you shrink out all the oceans and you have a ball that's 1/4 the size. It's just really unbelievable. It's fantastic. I'm starting to wonder how Earth ever got a crust in the first place and why, you know, right now the only thing we get is oceans. Like, where's the switcheroo where, hey, you get some continents for a little while and then it stops making continents and then we make ocean. Obviously, there's some more islands popping out of volcano heads, but for the most part, we don't have new continents coming around anytime soon. But so, as we are so sure that our decisions are the right decisions, and we tend to dismiss others continuing to do research in areas that we believe have been concluded, just know there's a fraction of a chance that you could still be wrong, and they're right. But honestly, if this was a physical example where both of you go to the South Pole, and you're doing exploration, forget flat earth or whatever, and you look around for a little while, and they look around for a little while, you stay 6 months, and they're going to stay a two-year term, and you fly back to wherever you're from, but you have a Skype connection to them, why wouldn't you want to Skype with them? And say, well, did you find anything new? You're down there, right? Did you find anything new? No. Oh, yeah. You know, it was really strange. I was taking photographs of the horizon. It looks like it's curved, and I took it at night, and I found grid lines in the sky. You know, I mean, whatever. I think I beat that point up, but it's real important to me. We have something cool going online, obviously. It's where the consciousness of man is improving, you know, at exponential rates. And we can't be divided by theories like flat earth. If the cognitive dissidence was a cognitive infiltration document supposedly written in 2008, which who knows if that's real, but if that's a real document drafted by a government agency under the Army Corps of PSYOPs, if that's real, then the reason why they injected flat earth into society is to utterly divide us. And a billion other theories, Mandela effects and all that kind of stuff, right? So do you really want to give them a victory, allowing them to split us up? But there are shills, right? There are intentional paid shills that actually receive paychecks from some agency somewhere. George Soros is one of their biggest employers. And they don't seem to work. They sit at home in their living room all day and make videos. Some of them are married to people that pay their bills. Some of them have inherited wealth that allows them to do it. And they are extremely frustrating to see. Now, the truth of the matter is, no one can really prove, as far as I know, that anyone's a real shill. There hasn't been a single person on YouTube that has been exposed where we show their bank accounts and we say, see, there's a $40,000 check from one of George Soros' 170 corporations to do this. Now, we have protester shills that have Craigslist posts to go down for 15 to 25 bucks an hour and cause problems for Bernie Sanders. But within our YouTube thing, I don't know that anyone's been exposed yet. And then you have sort of your unintentional shill, someone who has been duped by the original shill, and they're sort of a spawn. And through tribalism, they want to be accepted by a group, and hey, the shill group will make you feel like you're accepted for a little while until they're done with you like a condom and they throw you away. So once you sense that you think you might have a shill, you start to go into protection mode and you start ejecting folks and making everyone kind of come back through the front door. It's not that you won't talk to them again. It's just, I'm going to ask you a few more questions that I didn't realize I needed to ask everyone when they came into my circle. All right. Fair game. But I named this episode The Benefits of Flat Earth. The benefits of flat earth argument is very simple. Millions of people now have gone out and researched where we are. They have, you know, I think most people have watched 20 to 50 videos on YouTube of varying lengths to try and assess information from various unknown sources. It's all unknown. Has anyone met Jaron from Jaronism? I don't know that I have, right? No one's, well, very few people met Mark Sargent, et cetera, down the line, right? So we just have to kind of watch their videos and take it in and make our own judgments, right? But how many people referred to the world as heliocentric 2 years ago? I can tell you I never did. I have never uttered that word in my life until last year. I got 103 in college astronomy without taking a note, okay? And I never said heliocentric. Ball. So think about all the science that we ingested in this process. And think about the improvement in philosophical perception of the universe that happened during this exercise. Remember, I always say philosophers are the Magellans of reality, of perception. That's why they're super important. A lot of you will go down to bookstores, and if you're like me, you will go down and you'll research all the areas in the bookstore that aren't related to fiction, and you'll obviously at some point end up in the philosophy section, which is usually pretty small, and you'll see these books like Philosophy According to the New York Giants, Philosophy, you know, According to Rolling Stones, you know, and what it does is it looks at all of the reality that was injected into society from these sources, like the lyrics of a rock band, the theory and passion of the Yankees, right? Could be, you know, I've always wanted to write one based on Tomita, the Japanese musician. I think his music is one that's, he usually plays other people's music, but the way he does it, the way he composes it, I believe is unlike anyone else on planet Earth, which is why he's famous. So we now could write the book or start writing the book, you know, Flat Earth Philosophy or what have you, and how that experience over the last 12 months has increased our awareness of what we don't know, especially, okay, and what we do know. I think when you get done with Flat Earth Theory, you still have, as far as, you know, there's scientific deduction about how the curvature of the Earth works and how you measure distances and that kind of stuff, which you can just prove on a piece of paper that a lot of the assertions from the Flat Earth community are missing a lot of geometry and trigonometry. But you also have to put it in the pile, regardless of what your conclusion is, that you've never been in space, you've never seen Earth from space, and that the space agencies themselves have never produced convincing proof that they've taken a single shot of Earth from space. You know, when Neil deGrasse Tyson comes out and says the world's in a blade sphere, your jaw should go to the ground. When the blue marble shot from Apollo 17 doesn't match Google Earth, and the Black Sea's all scrambled in the first 20 years of the shot, and they eventually cleaned it up, that should piss you off. They're lying. They're lying about their accomplishments, but in doing so, they are damaging your perception of where you are. And you're kind of like, look, I can handle any answer. Just answer it. You don't know, you do know. These pictures are fake. These pictures aren't fake. These pictures are composites from U2s. This is one from a satellite in space. So the major, major benefit is that we all dove back into reassessing our reality. We really did. And let me ask you, I know that especially if you watch this show, you know that I dabble in lots of episodes that try to question reality, to try to explain reality, both existentially, spiritually, scientifically, and it's a fun exercise for some of our brains, right? Some of our brains just start getting off on the idea that we're even having the discussion, let alone maybe coming to an interesting conclusion that there's a mystery somewhere. But for my dollar, if I paid $1 for every theory I've ever thought of, or any paradigm of thought that someone has brought me on YouTube or whatever in conversation, the amount of profit that I have made from Flat Earth, visiting the Flat Earth theory, has been the winner. You know, when you're an investor and you put money into companies, you know, you lose most of the time. You just do. Good friend of mine has invested in, you know, dozens of companies in his lifetime. And he says, look, about 1 in 6 hits. And when you have a hit, you get all the money you need to invest in the 5 that aren't going to work. flat Earth is a hit. I didn't know about the Peter projection map. I never knew that existed. And, you know, even if you believe it's a round ball, there's some very interesting things about the South Pole. It's very strange how we can't fly over the damn thing. Not even researchers can fly over it. I have people that are extremely wealthy, and they have taken trips to the South Pole. And they actually told me in conversation, you know, I flew over the South Pole. It's definitely round. And I go, you flew over it? You flew over the Antarctica? I mean, from one continent over the island to another continent? No, no, no. They won't let you do that. You can only fly over an island and the coast of it. I'm like, well, okay, well, you didn't fly over it. Do you think that's a little weird? What, you didn't give them enough money? What I thought of an interesting excuse why you can't fly over it. It's never been said, but maybe they can take this and put it in their quiver. Because the electromagnetic poles of the Van Allen belts are screaming out of the South Pole, you know, headed around the belt into the North Pole, which is why compasses go north, right? Because all the electromagnetic waves are going north in that motion. That perhaps the instruments get utterly confused, even remotely flying over the South Pole. Perhaps it would be, you know, they always draw the picture of the Van Allen belts, and I've mentioned this a long time ago, but there's all this stuff that because they draw the two plumes that go left and right in most cross sections of the Earth, they make you believe that the North Pole and the South Pole barely have any Van Allen belt emissions, when it is actually the point of ejection and the point of reassertion, and therefore the density and lethal nature of the Van Allen belts at the North and South Pole should be devastating. Utterly devastating, because you're then compressing all of the charged particles down into the bowels of the plasma core of the Earth, screaming through the bowels of the spinning Earth inside, popping out the bottom, and continuing the process seemingly forever. So they could simply build up that theory and say, look, you know, the charged particles coming out of the bottom of the Earth is too dangerous to put vehicles through, like a hurricane of charged particles. You know, when you use Google Earth, the funny thing is that when you look at any photographs of the North Pole, it's clean as a whistle. There are no algorithms that look like it's sewing together other photographs. When you look at the South Pole on your computer, you can't do this on your phone very well, but you look at Google Earth on your computer, you rotate the bottom of the Earth up, so you're looking straight dead on to the South Pole. There's a horrible algorithm that's stitching everything together. There's like a star fitting at the bottom where they've kind of stitched what looks like a strip of white land, and they've stitched it all together to look like a continent. Why? Why? This is supposed to be satellite footage, right? This isn't YouTube footage. And if we were supposedly, as of the late 80s, early 90s, when DuPont was trying to force the government to switch out of Freon, and which was had lost its patent, over to the replacements that they had put forth, not anything Freon-based. We had the big ozone layer scare. You couldn't turn on your TV at night without seeing some scare of the ozone layer going away. It was even written into a Star Trek Next Generations episode. It was so fucking crazy and global warming bullshit, you know? It was DuPont trying to say, look, Freon lost its patent. Everyone has can make a competitor product to us. We've lost our major, major source of income. So we need to demonize Freon with this bullshit that it's hurting the atmosphere. And then when they make it illegal to use Freon, DuPont has the only legal replacement. And so DuPont campaigned from 82 to 92 to get that to be certified. And they won. And that's how DuPont's still alive today. But there's something weird about how Google Earth can't just get a clean shot of the South Pole. So again, the benefits are that it's opened our mind, right? I know you get this, but I feel like no one's talking about this. No one's willing to kind of stand on the, or sit on the fence or whatever, and look at the left side, look at the right side and say, guys, I know you're taking sides here. And outside of those that look like they're sort of shilly, weird people, I mean, you know, you have, my God, I never even knew this was starting, but you know, once Flat Earth took off, you know, it took about 8 months for the weirdos to show up, but my God, the amount of weirdos that Jed Skeptic has been able to uncover is phenomenal. I mean, my jaw was on the ground of people, you know, talking about drinking their own piss and weird shit. I mean, yeah, I know you just cringed there just for a second because you had no idea that was coming, but they're out there. And on that point, let's talk about the easy demonization of a decent conversation. So, like I just said, you had some Flat Earth people come out towards the tail end of last year, and they were just associating it with their practices of all kinds of ritualistic stuff that was repulsive, right? Well, if you are an American citizen, or you study anything here over here politically, you will be well aware of something called the Tea Party over here. And it was, now I'm not talking about the 1700s Tea Party, but the reemergence in the 21st century, where individuals had essentially discovered that the IRS is basically not allowed constitutionally to take taxes on wages here in America, because when the Constitution was written, your wages were your property. It's written into the Constitution, which is why deep in the bowels of the IRS tax code, there is no law or statute that says you have to pay your taxes to the IRS. But if you do file, then you volunteer yourself into the system, and you have to do it correctly. Otherwise, you run into problems, right? And there's something like 3,500 agents of the IRS that were the founding members of the Tea Party, the 21st century Tea Party, and said, we're going to gut this place and go back to legal taxation. And the Constitution allows taxation of wages, but only under one circumstance, and that is that all the people ratify a tax bracket that is even for all people. So if you say, look, it's a 15% flat tax and you all agree to it, then you're allowed to pay 15%. But you can't have one person at 12, one person at 15, one person at 38, if that's illegal. So it was a very dangerous organization, because the government likes to spend tons of money and it's all yours, right? Okay, so there was a kernel of truth and integrity and intent and truth in the Tea Party reemergence. But the government had to shut them down. They absolutely had to shut them down as quickly as possible. Because they said, you know, first of all, if that information spreads, the Aaron Russo Freedom to Fascism movie, which is really, I think, what kicked it off. If you haven't seen that, go watch that one. Then no one's going to pay taxes, and we can't stop the people from knowing what's in the Constitution. In Aaron Rizzo's movie, he interviews a former head of the IRS, and he pinned the guy down in a conversation and said, show me the law or statute that says you have to pay taxes on your wages. Your tax code says it's voluntary. And the guy says, a traffic light's voluntary. He says, no, it's not. There's law and statutes that say you got to stop at the red and go at the green, right? So the guy was totally exposed. But what did they do? This group is no longer than maybe 3 or 4 months publicly, and they held a rally. And they got the governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, to show up and start talking. She wasn't invited. They just put her on the premise, said, go up there and start talking. And here you have what some people are, you know, they're surprised, they're shocked that this woman's here, but they maybe in a really quick and hasty way said, okay, well, she's at least a real politician. Maybe she'll help us out. And that bounced all over the world that the lunatic, weird housewife with 5 kids who's, you know, this, that, and the other thing, she's bad, bad, bad. She's now supporting this Tea Party. Look at the integrity of the Tea Party. And then, of course, the president went and attacked all of the Tea Party people with the IRS to show them who's boss. I remind you of this story because there's absolutely no problem with the foundational arguments of the Tea Party here in America. They're absolutely correct. But then it started to be called the Tea Bag Party. It's really funny because I watched people who had no idea what teabagging was use teabagging all the time. And I at one point, I think I was talking to some housewife, and I said, do you know what teabagging is? Oh, no, huh? What is that? I thought it was just a funny term. I said, go look it up. Go look it up and go to Google, look it up, and press images, and tell me how much you need to use that phrase. But now, what is the emotion, the word for the emotion that galvanizes us one way or the other? I am going to suggest that it will be at least a synonym to the word certainty, or certain, or sure. That's what we think inside of our souls, inside of our minds, I guess, to say, this is how I'm going to orient my life. I am certain that that is this way or that way, true or false. I look at the bottom of the oceans on Google Earth, which, again, is based on map information that existed, you know, decades and decades before Google Earth put it into a computer ball for me to look at. So it's not like Google thought it up. No one really trusts Google to come up with scientific information. They're just usurping it from other sources. But I will say that if someone said, are you 100% certain the world is heliocentric in a ball? 100% is 100%, right? It's different than 99%. In order to preserve my head on my shoulders with the gun pointed at my head, I'd have to say no. Now, if they ask me, are you pretty certain that it's round? I'd say, oh, absolutely. I'm pretty damn certain it's round. I would. So with that information, as I'm picking my friends, how do I apply that 1% of uncertainty, or whatever the fraction of a percent it is? Be interesting to try to find out how to calculate that percentage. How would I apply that to the choices of people I hang out with? For me, it goes down to this. I have, of any issue that I might debate in this world, I obviously have people around me that don't agree with me. Chemtrails is a huge one. You know, I've took pictures of these things for years, for nearly a decade. And in doing so, I proved to myself beyond a shadow of a doubt after studying aviation rules and all kinds of things about contrails, I am 100% certain there's an aerosol program, which seems to be off right now, thank God, that has been manipulating our health. Let's just put it that way. But I know for a fact that if I were to somehow govern my circle of friends based on the believability of that theory, my God, I'd have a tiny group of friends. Tiny group of friends. And then, you know, if that's all you have to think about, you may not be very happy. And it's the other people in our life that don't believe in chemtrails that kind of lift our spirits if we were ever down, you know. And I will say in the last, I really started taking the major photographs in 2008. About a year ago, I stopped giving a shit. That baton's been handed off to thousands of other people, and they are marching forward constantly on that, so I don't need to do anything anymore. If there's a movement, if there's a break in the theory, if there's some action I can take to help us win and get rid of them, I'm right there. I'm a reserve soldier of the chemtrail army, right? So I use my friends that don't believe to kind of return to the reality that I wish were real. With my moon stuff, one of my buddies, it's very against any conspiracy against the moon, landings being anything other than real. He's a wonderful soul. He is probably one of the most positive, you know, look at the glass half full kind of guys I know. And so at no point do I want that guy to be out of my life, because he's just fun to talk to. Life gets a little more sparkly when you talk to that guy. And it's cool. I know that I have some reservations, I should say, about reality, but he doesn't. He's certain about everything, or at least he tries to put that off on the outside. But now let's take it one step further, because I educate from time to time. Let's think about this. When a kid goes to school, they come to a library, they come to certain classes, and there's globes in the classroom, dictating the paradigm of which we perceive the reality of this object that we are stuck to. Right away, with the globe in the room and no other paradigm of existence in the room, the mind gravitates to that one solution. And so, of course, why would you believe that the world is anything other than a ball? Now, obviously, the true answer is because you do research and you figure out through all these observations that that's the way it is. Still doesn't explain the gyroscope not turning in the center of a plane's dashboard, right? Cockpit dashboard. See, there's those little ones out there that make you go, damn, this is fucking thing. What am I being deceived? What's the deal, right? Now, I will say that K through 12 that I went through, other than my astronomy class, kind of doing a passive method of teaching this, there was never really a moment in time where they gave Flat Earth ever an announcement of a previous theory other than to say Christopher Columbus was the pivotal point in 1492 that he, you know, persuaded the king and queen of Spain to let him take a boat over this cliff. It's all romantic horseshit, but whatever. So that's how you learn that the world is round and that there used to be a theory that it was flat. But you know what? They don't go into any details like we do today about the world being flat and go through the disc theory and all this stuff. We kind of think of the Kansas album covers, right? Okay. But now what if you got a high school level, junior level class, sophomore level class, and it's astronomy. And you task the class. Okay, you split them right down the middle. And you can give them the option. Okay, this side's going to be heliocentric ball. This side, you're going to be flat earth. If you'd like to switch, do it now. But we have to have even set of people on both sides to the best of our ability. We're going to spend the next month having you guys try to drum up all the evidence you possibly can that it's round with proof. And you drumming up all the evidence you have that it's flat. Let's go. Wouldn't that fifth week be very interesting when you have to push all the folks together and they sit there and they debate in the classroom about the shape of the world? Maybe as a little caveat, we say, if any of you are on the round side and you decide it's flat, if you find someone in the flat that's starting to decide it's round, you guys can switch places. I think it would be a fascinating, fascinating exercise for kids. Because imagine being in high school and you've been told your whole life that it's round and there are no other possibilities. And all of a sudden, you have yourself shaken up like most of us did. You're like, man, there are some things that are just weird. I mean, seriously, the gyroscope not turning, it's a big one. It's like, I have not been a pilot. I've never seen this phenomenon happen. The only evidence we have that has happened, if you haven't watched it happen, are testimonies online, which could all be fake, you know? Doesn't seem like these guys, some of these pilots who don't have the slick willy sort of YouTube channel personalities like a Mark Sargent, these pilots seem to be just sort of normal old people talking. People in artillery units in the Navy say we don't really adjust for the curvature of the Earth. People in armory brigades who shoot, you know, tanks, they say they don't. Snipers say they don't. They say they're taught it, but on the battlefield, there's no adjustment. I don't know if that's true. I've heard testimonies of all these people randomly saying, well, you know, we really don't. People in the Navy say that sometimes they travel the nautical distance from point A to point B, and other times they travel the same distance with no looping in the ocean, and they seem to get there a hell of a lot faster. Or sometimes it takes a lot longer. Bizarre, right? Let's face it, the world's biggest problem right now is that we don't think anymore. It's a dying breed. Actually, let me pitch that a little bit differently, because I shouldn't be dismissive, because I actually think that the real way to say this accurately is to say I would think, I don't know when the sweet spot is, but I think that maybe if you were to plot it on a line graph, obviously the amount of people that are thinking every day was declining and declining at an exponential rate. And believe me, it's not hard in America to find a bunch of people holding protest signs who are still on that curve down. But there are, I guess, with a conservative estimate, millions of people now due to YouTube thinking again. Doesn't matter if they're right or wrong. They are massaging the neural net in their mind to not only use mathematics, which is sort of the lowbrow left brain side of conclusions, but they're using the right side of their brain to reimagine what goes to the left to be calculated. And that's huge. We all need to think. We all need to think. Why do some of us say once you drop LSD, the world will change? That'll be completely peaceful. If everyone was in a good state of mind and we gave them some acid and they had a 14-hour trip at a really beautiful place where there's just their favorite music playing, hopefully not like gangster rap or anything, but something ethereal and positive and wonderful wave-wise, when you're done, you will have your brain rebooted. If thinking was an old diesel engine inside your brain, it's and it was off, and you drop LSD, it's going to have high octane gas in it. All the dust will be blown off. A new paint job will be put on. All the parts will be replaced that were failing. And this thing will be a Tesla motor. Unfortunately, you can't get real LSD in the world, so be wary of trying. But you know what I mean, right? But there are other ways than dropping a hallucinogenic to get your mind going. It's just allowing yourself to question everything around you. Now, as a footnote on the end of this episode before I conclude, this will be the conclusion, I should say. I'll fold this into the conclusion. The idea is that we know that history has been revised in horrific ways. I use the word horrific for one specific reason. The accomplishments of man are phenomenal and important. You know, I would say that the severity of importance for the true innovations of mankind living on this planet, regardless of how you believe this place is created, it is the pinnacle of priority. When we figured out how to create fire, it was an accomplishment that meant the difference between our species surviving on this planet and going extinct. When we figured out how to create shelters of any kind, crawling in caves, building a hut out of trees, then stones, then mason stones with mortar, it was the difference between us surviving and not surviving. And there's a million of those things, right? All stacked on the shoulders of the previous accomplishment. So when someone goes back in history and engages in the destruction of our history, I can't imagine a more treasonistic being on this planet. For better or worse, history has to be preserved and protected beyond probably anything that we record in some format, a mud tablet, a stone relief carving, papyri, computers, whatever, books. I am now utterly and completely convinced that the history of Egypt was probably the most heavily attacked piece of evidence, or piece of history, excuse me, of mankind that we know about in the 21st century. And it was attacked for many reasons, but probably mainly because they were amazingly brilliant. Because they were amazingly brilliant, you have the haves and the have-nots. And unfortunately in this reality, there always seems to be more have-nots than haves, because the perception is you want what is rare. And by definition, what is rare is rare. And so the false paradigm is put on top of the perception of mankind to say we want what is rare, and we want to feel justified in doing anything we can to get the rare things distributed evenly. Money is rare. It is. And if it wasn't rare, it wouldn't have any value, and therefore you wouldn't be able to buy anything. So when you have the money associated with control and power, and it is because it is a rare commodity that people will lust for, and because we are strung out on materialism, it becomes the thing that is desired. But then on the other spectrum, we have poverty, where people aren't able to get enough of even the most basic rare commodity to live. Then this artificial duality between the two, where you hate the rich people and you're the poor person. You know, there are obviously arguments for all that stuff. But back in the days of the Egyptians, it may have just been envy. Just pure envy. It may have been a racial, which I believe it is, a racial cleansing of who is better than someone else. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror, white people don't tend to think that they're white when they look in the mirror. But I can tell you, it is my guess that a black person looks in the mirror and knows every morning that they're black. The second they go out in the population and there's a ton of white people in America and they're like, what, 11% of the country, whatever that low percentage is, you know what color you are. And that's got to be a little bizarre for the mind. But to be born into it and you can't escape it, and that is made a demonistic thing. It forces you to start lusting for things and solutions, right? Beyonce trying to be as white as she possibly can until she can't sell any more records to those people, then she becomes black again, you know, that kind of weird stuff, right? let's expose our sort of lust matrix. Let's expose our value matrix in the world. In the end, you have a circle around you that is your halo of existence, right? What you can see with your eyeballs and what you're responsible for within the halo of your vision, whether you're blind or not, you just change the senses, but you know you're responsible for things. I'm guilty of feeling the need to alienate people because within my halo of existence, I have probably a little slightly more strict policy on what I believe to be reality. And I have to keep the folks that don't believe what I believe governed, you know, in terms of I don't want to be surrounded by people that don't believe what I believe. I would never, you know, let's put it this way. We'll use racism as a quick example. We all know a racist. We do. And, you know, there's different levels of racism. If someone's constantly engaging in racial comments and stuff, that's different. You want to get those people out of your life. You just do. But you'll have a person that slips up here and there, or there really are facts about the differences of cultures, and sometimes you have to have those conversations, but it's not necessarily racism. It's just observing the differences and acknowledging dispositions of one race over another. This race believes that women are, you know, dogs, and the other one, you know, believes that they're equal partners. But you have to measure how much that you allow that sort of influence into your halo, because it's going to potentially change who you are. You know, there's areas of the world that are very liberal. San Francisco, for instance. And you can move into San Francisco, a hardened Republican, and stay there 10 years and come out a liberal. And you can move from San Francisco to Orange County, which actually, honestly, just speaking, Orange County isn't what it used to be. It used to be this, they used to call it the Orange Curtain. It's not that way anymore. It is very neutral, very balanced. You find plenty of both sides everywhere. But, you know, if there was a single percentage swayed in one direction, it'd be more conservative than liberal. But you might come down here and you become a Fox News addict because everyone around you is hive-minding that thought process, that philosophy. Well, let's go back to Flat Earth to finish off this, and we'll cut down the episode. What threat do we have in our circle of life if someone in our circle believes it's round and another person believes it's flat? Or you believe it's round and they believe it's flat, or vice versa? I'm going to say that the acidic nature of their influence on your life doesn't exist. You should be confident in your own skin about what you believe, and you just sort of let people have their ancillary thoughts that are different than yours, and it's okay. I assure you, anyone who's a Christian sits in a room with people that are also Christian, but you don't interpret Genesis the same way. You don't interpret Revelations the same way. You have different philosophies about who Paul was. But you coexist just fine in a chapel, sitting on a pew. You raise your hand and pray to God. And you're not worried about the person next to you not interpreting the Bible the same way that you do. If anything, you might meet a really great person. And you might, you know, date their daughter or their son and get married and have a great life. And it's all because the central consciousness of God was the reason why you came together. And you know that every time you eat a Thanksgiving dinner at the family table, that not a single person at that table believes the same thing. In fact, if you really got into the debate, you might actually yell at each other, which is why you should never discuss politics or religion at the table. So some of us think it's round, some of us think it's flat. I don't see how that's a big threat to any of us, right? Let's face it, the toughest thing that we can find in this world today are people with integrity. People who will take their shirt off their back for you when you need it. I believe that folks have found each other with that equal level of integrity outside of the flat earth issue. I've seen them have issues with each other, or one has an issue with the other. And I would say, think about it. Think about whether or not that's really where that needs to conclude. Now, the only caveat to that is that, you know, when you have a friend that has weird friends, or they're willing to hang out with people that you think are unacceptable people. You're like, why are you talking to that person? It can't do anything but influence you in the wrong direction. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. But maybe you should ask the question, well, do you really believe what those other folks are saying? you know, because they seem to really go off the deep end on this. What appeals to you about that, those extreme views? What appeals to you about kind of touching base with folks that attack other people and, you know, don't seem to have, you know, much gray matter working between their ears, right? I have definitely shared in the experience of watching people debate flat earth together. And there'll be people in group conversations, and I don't understand why certain people are invited to the conversation, because they typically don't. Well, this, you know, a couple of people I've seen are just, they're not at the intellectual level. They haven't met the intellectual minimum to be included in the conversation, in my opinion. They offer nothing to the conversation. So that does puzzle me. But all that means to me is the person who invited them has a more open mind than I do. They are willing to tolerate the folks that are on level one of flat earth. And maybe they never get to level two. It's not my style, you know? So you may not want to hang out with people that hang out with people that you wouldn't hang out with. It almost starts to sound like who's on first. The benefits of flat earth is that we dove into science. We dove into all the theorems and all of the proofs of one way or the other, as claimed to be one way or the other. And without even trying, we made our own deductions and our own conclusions about those assertions. And man, you had to think to do that. That's the beautiful thing. You had to think to put that together. And my God, if you think in category A of life, and it will help you in deducing anything about category Z in life, because you thought. And that's beautiful. It will make you smarter all the way around. So let's continue that process. It's an exercise. My hope is that we don't allow it to affect our pools of friends too badly. Try to look inside the soul. The soul doesn't have anything to do with this particular reality and its final composition, right? It's oblivious to someone becoming Hitler or someone becoming, you know, a wonderful person. It merely experienced it remotely through the body and the instance that is the mind. If we are truly one being, whether this is a single consciousness rebirthing itself in the fourth dimension where we're all coexisting with ourselves at the same time, or we're a huge neural net of consciousness, what would be the point of the toe hating on the pinky? Yeah, some people get delusional. Some people serve the wrong masters. Some people probably are shills in real life. I doubt very many. Some people are just shit starters. They're griefers, as we used to call them in the late 90s. All right, that's their choice. You definitely don't have to put that energy in your life. But when you make a decision one way or the other as to keep people in your life or not, my suggestion is let's make sure that they are really a detriment to our life before we actually cast them out, you know? There's always unfollow on Facebook. You don't have to actually unfriend them. If they come at you and say, you must believe what I believe, and you totally disagree, well, that's where you can clip it off. But shy of that, you got your own brain, right? You got your own mind. Anyone who watches this show could definitely say they get an A+ in that area. I think you feel me. Hope this episode shines some light on some of the drama in the subject of flat earth, and hopefully it gets you to understand that just any conspiracy that makes you think is healthy for your brain. Whether or not you agree with it or disagree with it, it's healthy for the brain. And I think what's even more interesting is when you get done with a theory and you say, man, I'm permanently changed. You know, the Mandela effect for me in the area of the Star Wars Mandela, the Eli Whitney theory, they're pretty amazing to swallow that it went the other way. You know, pretty amazing. I'm permanently changed. I'm not quite sure whether or not this is some organic anomaly of time, or whether or not we have a super duper flaw in how history is reported. But you know, when the people participate in these things, can't remember how they live their lives, it's phenomenal. James Earl Jones not remembering his own line. Unbelievable. It's tantamount to painting the Mona Lisa, and then later on, her name is Moesha. And you're like, well, I'm pretty sure I called it Mona Lisa. No, man, it was Moesha. Come on.
Right?
Weird. If you dig this show, please give me a thumbs up. If you like the series, please subscribe. Understand, it's a variety show. So if you dig this episode, there's no guarantee the next one's for you. Just don't watch it. Don't worry about it. More is coming. I got a crap ton of episodes in the queue. I might just push this one out sooner. I'm finishing up the Morgellon edit right now. Obviously, it's trying to find photos that correlate with what I'm saying. It always slows the process down because I want to make sure it's, in my limited time, at least the images are accurate to what I'm saying. Anyway, take care of yourself and somebody else, and I will see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.